Welcome to Gin and Topic. We have tasted the gin and now we get on to our topic. Hey, Anya.
Hello, Sarah. It's Friday and
it is.
We're about to learn something and drink some gin.
We are. What could get better than that?
Honestly, I don't know because we've been doing this for 6 series, so clearly we enjoy it.
And hopefully others do too. So, drink and let's learn.
Let's learn. See you in a minute.
So, this week, Anya,
this week,
we are talking to Dr. Carol Helfter.
Nice, good, love it.
And Dr. Carol Helfter is an environmental physicist, group leader, biosphere, atmosphere exchange and effects at the UK Centre for Ecology and Hydrology.
Right, yeah, I understood all of that completely.
Did you get the environmental bit?
I got the environmental bit and some other ology.
Physicist bit and some ologies.
Yeah.
Well, let's give you the topic then, because that might help a little. We're talking about swamp methane.
Oh, Jesus, I need a drink.
Swamp methane.
Right.
Where does it come from and why
swamps,
should
probably.
We care?
Swamps and I'm not sure.
Well, so all I've thought about ever since I started talking to Dr. Carol Helfter is Shrek.
Shrek. Get out of my swamp!
Where does swamp methane come from? It's Shrek having a bath.
Sarah, which is the best Shrek? Serious question. Because there is a right answer.
Oh no, is there?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get it wrong then, aren't I?
You might. Which one's the best Shrek?
Well, the problem is, I haven't seen all of them so many times. I've only seen what we call Shrek and his babies.
Yes. Which is Shrek 3, but it's only beginning half an hour on a loop.
But on a loop. I've only ever seen that half an hour on a loop.
Uh-huh. Do you want me to tell you then?
Well, for me, it's the first Shrek. It's the OG first one.
No.
Because that's the one I've seen properly all the way through.
And I can understand that, but the best one is the second one because of holding out for a hero at the end, human Shrek, and the bit with the giant gingerbread man falling back and he goes, Morzo, Gingy. It's brilliant.
Is that the one with the fairy godmother in it?
Yes, when she sings at the end, holding out for a hero.
I think I've seen bits of it coming in and out when you've been watching.
So good.
But I don't think I've sat down from beginning to end. So maybe that's what I need to do.
We'll watch it.
So I think, you know, we'll get on to our things about what we know.
Yeah.
But, you know,
probably
we've
should.
Got a lot of Shrek.
I've got loads of Shrek. Yeah.
Loads of Shrek.
Very passionate about Shrek.
So we're talking swamp methane. The UK Centre for Ecology and Hydrology and a group leader of biosphere, atmosphere exchange and effects. You know, I think all I'm getting is like methane going up into the sky. So, don't know.
Right.
It's going to be an interesting one. Hopefully, lots of Shrek chat.
Oh, I hope so. That's about where my brain's at today. So this is going to be a quality episode for all of you at home.
But we have got gin, so that's okay.
It's okay.
So, we have our Caroon gin, not in a little apple teeny, although that would be really cool, given our topic, because we are now going to drink our Caroon whilst talking about swamp methane. And we've got our question of where does it come from and why should we care? So, Carol, you get to sit back and relax and drink some of your gin whilst Anya and I set the bar. We're going to just, you know, let you know where to start, you know, how expert we are already on swamp methane.
Yeah.
The gaps that you may want to fill.
I don't think it'll take long. Maybe have a sip of your drink, but be ready for it to be quite a short one.
Yes. So, swamp methane, where does it come from and why should we care? As we said earlier in our introduction, we think it comes from Shrek's farts.
No, you're making it sound like we're ridiculous, Sarah. You think it comes from Shrek's farts. I simply said that when I hear the word swamp, my first thought is the Shrek film.
It's Shrek.
That's always my knowledge of swamps. I don't have much more. And in terms of methane, whenever I hear it, I only think of cows. So realistically, my bar is absolutely on the floor because I've got nothing. I'm assuming we care because of global warming and the planet.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I'm pretty stumped.
Yeah. Well, okay. So when you were talking, I suddenly got a flashback to you when you were younger with your siblings.
Oh, God, straight away, I'm terrified.
Yeah, yeah. Sat on a bridge at my parents' house with sticks, digging out weeds from the pond just to clear it out. And the smell that would come from the rotting stuff that you were pulling out of the pond. So my thinking is that, you know, yeah, I love a bit of Shrek, and I would love that this whole episode was on the methane that Shrek was producing in his swamp bath, but I don't think it is. So I'm thinking that maybe we've got connections with plants that decompose at the bottom of places, that it's swamp-like environments, and why should we care? Because they're keeping everything down there. But if we're bringing things up, then that's the environmental issues.
Okay, Sarah.
Maybe.
Look at you.
That's my kind of thinking.
Carol, is she close?
Well, I'm also thinking about things like peat bogs and things like that and how important they are to preserve rather than cutting them up and chucking them on your fire. And so maybe that's also the connection with that swamps and the methane and keep it all in.
I'm sorry, who put 10p in you this morning and gave you all these ideas? You suck up, you.
It's because I had some gin. And I actually thought of the topic. I don't know if any of that is correct, but it just got me thinking beyond the fun of Shrek as to what it could connect with and therefore why should we care? So that's, I mean, that's where I'm at, is thinking we should, and thinking because it's like rotten stuff that should be better off buried and not left into the air. But I do also want to know if Shrek is killing the environment with his swamp fart.
Carol, I'm going to let you just go from there.
I must say that I'm really impressed. Your bars are not as low as you think, you know, because you haven't said a single thing that is not correct, you know. So well done. So I think that the best place to start is to define what a swamp actually is. And and basically, it's just an area of land that has water on it, you know, and it's either covered in water or it's just extremely wet, you know, saturated. And it can be either wet permanently or it can be wet seasonally, you know? So it's just an area that receives a significant amount of water. And when that happens, when you have a very wet area, and a peat bog is an example of a swamp, you know, it's just a very wet area. And when you have this very wet soil, what happens is that you don't have oxygen or not very much oxygen in the soil. And when you have these conditions, you stop the rotten stuff, like you call it. So all this, the dead animals, dead plants, you know, that have accumulated in the soil, they are not able to decompose because the microbes that are responsible for breaking down this this dead stuff need oxygen. And this is, so these swamps, what they do is that they are what we call carbon sinks. So they fix carbon. So instead of having this plant stuff munched up and, you know, having this carbon dioxide breathed out, this stays in the swamp. But the trade-off is that you have another type of, some other types of microbes which produce methane, and these operate best in the absence of oxygen. So you've got this trade-off. So you're taking down the carbon dioxide, you know, from the atmosphere through the plants, and the carbon stays in the soil because nothing breaks it down. But on the other hand, you have the perfect conditions for these methane-producing microbes to thrive and actually make methane. So this is what basically the connection between swamps and methane actually is. And the reason why we should care about what's happening in swamps is because they only cover about 6% of the total land surface on Earth, but they are responsible for about a third of all methane emissions globally.
Wow. That's a huge amount from just 6%.
It is a huge amount, yeah. And the thing is that the tropics, the tropical swamps, are responsible for 20%. So you know, disproportionately large amount comes from the tropics.
Because where do we find the 6%? I mean, the tropics you've mentioned, but where in the world is this swamp?
These swamps span pretty much all latitudes. So you will find them from the Arctic to the Antarctic. So some swamps actually are called in permafrost, so they're frozen. So the water is still there, but they're just not doing anything because the water is ice. But as they melt, they start to, the chemistry of the soil starts to change, and, you know, these emissions start to kick off. So they're very, very important, not just for the greenhouse gases and the climate, but also because they make for a very unique set of habitats for plants and animals, you know, and plants especially have adapted to be able to live in environments where obviously they are surrounded in water, they grow in water, and they don't have access to oxygen in the roots. So all of these things, these ecosystems are very, very special. And this sounds extremely nerdy. I'm sorry.
No, we love nerdy. Please.
Love nerdy. Yeah. How do they compare to cows?
That's a very good question. And I don't think that we can say that they're good or bad. They're just there, you know. This is, you know, they've been around, you know, for, you know.
Yeah, they don't have a choice as to what they're doing.
Exactly. So the reason they're changing, what they're doing is changing, is because we have done things, you know, to the environment that has caused the climate to warm up, and that's affecting, you know, their emissions. But for example, agriculture, and cows especially, are one of the largest sources of methane, you know, globally, and especially cattle. They're infamous for producing a lot of methane. That's without doubt. I don't know off the top of my head, you know, what proportion of global methane they actually contribute, but it's a large amount for sure. But all of these things are theoretically man-made, because, you know, we raise cattle, you know, we through our agricultural practices, you know, we create these emissions, whereas these natural wetlands are just natural wetlands, you know. But where things start to change is when we interact with these wetlands, if we drain them, if we, you know, for example, in Africa, people, and in Indonesia in particular, these wetlands and peatlands are being drained to make way or create space for agriculture, palm oil plantations and things like that. And this is where it becomes problematic when, you know, man-made, interventions, you know, disrupt, you know, the natural state, these pristine environments. So if you remove the water, what's starting to happen is that all of this stuff that was prevented from rotting or decomposing because there was no oxygen, suddenly all of this is available to decomposition because oxygen is introduced. There's no water, so oxygen, you know, and gas molecules are going to replace, you know, where the water was. And so you don't have this carbon sink anymore. All of this gets, the carbon stored is broken down and released into the atmosphere. But wetlands themselves are not good or bad. They're just air, you know.
And the methane levels that are produced, has that always been the same, or are they producing more methane because of the warming climate?
That's exactly what's happening. Temperature has a direct influence on the methane emissions, because this gas is produced from microbial processes, and they are, you know, responsive to temperature. So the warmer you get, the more emissions you will have. And what we've seen in the past, say, especially 5 years, is that there is an acceleration in how much methane is released into the atmosphere, you know, year on year. Mm-hmm. And there can be a host of reasons for this, but it is thought that especially the tropical wetlands play a strong role in this. And this is because of climate warming, it's believed. That's one of the theories.
And is that something we ought to be concerned about? Is that part of the reason we should care about them? Or is it like, if you just got rid of all the cows, you'd be in a much better position?
The thing is that to really make a big change, you know, something that we can readily implement is acting on man-made, you know, emissions. So especially reining in emissions from agriculture, for example, you know, that is something, or dealing with the emissions that come from treating water, wastewater, you know, or landfills and things like that, you know, production and distribution of fossil fuels, you know, gas, all of this, we know that they are very, very big sources. And we can do things about them because, you know, we know where the sources are. We know why they are behaving the way they are. For example, we know that the gas distribution is leaky. So in theory, if you fix the pipes, you know, you can decrease the emissions. For wetlands, it's a bit of a different kettle of fish, especially the natural ones, because they are just responding to what's going on in their environment. What you can do is, for example, stop the degradation. For example, in peat bogs, you know, one of the big conservation efforts at the moment consists in re-wetting, you know, the peat bogs, you know, because they were often drained, you know, for agricultural purposes. But now if you re-wet them, you restore, hopefully, the carbon sink, you know, that was there in a natural state. So these are things that we can do, but they take maybe more effort and more time, you know, not necessarily more money, but the gains are there. The pristine wetlands, there's not too much you can do about them, except leaving them be, you know.
Yeah, which, you know, yeah, leave it be. Leave everything be. Let's not keep stealing from this earth. Let's leave it be. But anyway, put that soapbox away. Can I explore a bit more about how this methane is produced? So you were saying these microbes.
So methane is produced in an area of the soil which is completely waterlogged or mostly waterlogged. So these microbes do not, the ones that produce methane need to do so in the absence of oxygen. It's just, you know. Mm-hmm. And so if you imagine the soil, if you go, you might well have, unless the soil is completely underwater, you might be in a situation where you have a very wet, saturated, you know, water-saturated area. This is where the methane is produced. And as you go towards the surface, you might get a slightly drier soil. And what's interesting is that you have another community of microbes which consume the methane. They use it as part of their metabolism. So you have a competition. You have different communities of microbes. So depending on the balance between these two communities, you might have more or less methane that's able to escape, you know, to the atmosphere. So the methane, imagine that the methane is produced relatively deep in the soil. I'm going to say relatively deep because it could be shallow. It depends where the water is, really. And then the gas has to bubble up. It has to diffuse up to the surface. And if it's lucky, it's not going to meet any, you know, methanotrophs, so methane-eating, you know, bacteria.
Mm. What were they called?
Methanotrophs.
Oh, such a good name.
Yeah.
And methanogens, so methanogenesis, that's the production of methane. So the methanogens produce the methane, the methanotrophs, they eat it.
They all sound like sort of mythical creatures. They could be a relative of the Minotaur. It's brilliant.
So basically, you have a competition between the two.
Who would win in a fight?
Exactly.
And so how did you get into studying swamp methane? then? I mean, it wasn't something that a career teacher ever said to me.
Yeah, that's a good question. And actually, I didn't, there was no direct career path, you know, that led me to being a swamp methane, you know, scientist.
Yes, I'll give you a little secret. That is always the way. When we say to people, how do you get into this really niche thing? They're always like, it's a bit weird.
The thing is that, you know, you've got to keep following, you know, what's trending, you know, and basically what's trending at the moment, it's the greenhouse gas problem, obviously, you know, it's climate change, and methane is a big topic. So essentially, you have to identify, you know, where the gaps in knowledge lie, for example, you know, and where it might be worth, you know, carrying on research, you know, to learn more about what we don't know. And there are a lot of things that we know we don't know. And this is where we have to, you know, start probing. And tropical wetland methane is one of these really key areas at the moment, because we suspect strongly that they're responsible for, you know, a lot of the sort of like climate warming, you know, that's going on, but we don't really necessarily understand why. So if you'd asked 20 years ago, you know, they would not necessarily have been on the radar, because it hadn't been seen as a problem. So no, there was not a teacher that told me, you know, will be a methane scientist.
Funny that. And so you've been out to these tropical swamps with that, you know, understanding that they are contributing and therefore trying to work out why. Where are we talking about? Where are these tropical swamplands? What do they look like? Where is it?
Tell us a bedtime story and paint the scene.
Make us want to go.
Where are they? The tropical ones, the very, very big ones, are in South America. And, you know, they span, obviously, the Amazon, you know, is an obvious location, but they also, you know, you find them in Peru, in Chile, you know, all over. So they, in terms of how much, you know, emissions they produce and size, they are very, very substantial. But then you also have big wetlands in Africa, for example, in the Congo Basin, you know, in the Sud, which is in Sudan. And what they look like, that's very difficult to say, because the vegetation ranges from grasses to trees, depending on where you are, you know. And they also, the water can be fresh, the water can be saline, it can be brackish. So that's a little bit of both, you know, in between. So, and this explains why you have such a variety of plants and, you know, and animals that actually, and the richness of the biodiversity that thrives and comes from these wetlands. So there's not one type of wetland, you know, but they're all vegetated, otherwise they're not wetlands.
How was swamp methane identified as being a big contributor? Because, as we said, there's this balance of good and bad, but how did that come about that people then started to go, hang on a second,
it's not just the cows?
what's going on here?
That's such a good question, and I'm going to say straight away that I'm not an expert. I'm going to give you the sort of very light, you know, pop knowledge version of, you know.
Perfect. That's what that's we all like we need. All of our levels to be. Need. Pub knowledge. So oh, that yes. One day when it comes up in a quiz, I can go, I've got Did the answer you know? To that one, guys.
Got that. Tick.
Yeah. So what you can do is the methane, the chemical formula of methane is CH4, so it's got a carbon, you know, atom in there. And carbon has...
Straight away, this doesn't sound like a pub quiz I've ever been to, but carry on.
So basically, without going into too much detail, you've got something. These carbon atoms come in different weights, let's say. So they are the isotopes, you know. So you've got a way of telling... You got an isotopic, what's called an isotopic signature of your carbon. And depending on what the source of the methane was, the signature differs, you know. So if you have, you know, methane that came from natural gas, this isotopic signature will be very, very distinct from, you know, a microbial source. And this is how it's been shown that, you know, the natural sources, so the microbial sources make a big contribution.
And so we basically got researchers out there that have just been measuring everything just in case, you know, because you never know what's going to crop up, and that have noticed these things?
In a sense, but it's very rare that somebody does everything, you know. So we had recently a very big project where people, we tried to do everything, but not, you know, a single group, you know, it was a collaboration, big effort.
Yeah. Yeah, must be a big effort, really, to, you know, as you said.
You're talking about a third of all methane.
Exactly, a third of all methane around the globe, and therefore trying to work out what's doing what and what's important. And is there a way of, well, I don't know where, but so I'm thinking about this connection with our gin, and our gin is, the distillery is powered on their through the methane that's produced by the byproduct of their, I think it's through the whiskey, isn't it? Is there anything we can do to capture that methane and with it? But then as I'm saying it, I'm like, these are massive expanse of wetlands. That's probably very difficult.
Yes. In theory, if you can capture it, you know, you have, you know, a source, you know, of energy, in a sense, you know, but the problem is what you said. These are very, very, what you call a diffuse source. So they cover very, very, very large areas. So that makes it problematic. But on the other hand, what you can do, for example, what they do at this distillery, they have probably, I imagine, an area where they keep whatever, you know, they use to produce the whiskey somewhere. Where it ferments and starts to produce methane. And but because this is done in a controlled and closed environment, they can actually get the gas out and use it, you know, to power their operations. And this is also done in landfills and, you know, such operations. But for natural wetlands, it's much, much more difficult just because of the size, you know.
Yeah, we can't just put a big dome over it and capture everything.
Exactly.
So what should we be doing with these wetlands to sort of balance this?
Oh, it's that question of, if negative, you were president of the entire world, what would you do?
I think that what we should do is, the ones that we haven't actually damaged, we should just leave them be, you know, and not drain them, you know, not cut them down, and just leave them be, because that's what, you know, how they are supposed to function. And the ones that have been degraded, damaged, you know, and, you know, we should try to restore them.
And that restoration is about filling the water back in.
That's it. Yeah. That's the most important thing you can do. I think it's just to let it become wet again, become a wetland.
I'm fascinated now. So I'm trying to picture a day in your life, essentially. I'm trying to imagine, I can't tell if you're in a lab, I can't tell, what is your day to day when you're looking at swamp methane?
Right, yeah. no 2 days are the same.
Yeah.
No, but realistically, a lot of it is project-based. So imagine you get some funding to carry out a piece of research. So some of it will be spent, you know, going out in the field, wherever that is. It's not necessarily in the tropics, but it's always somewhere boggy and smelly, you know.
Nice usually. If it is, though. You know, at least if you're staying boggy and smelly during the day, you can go stay somewhere a little bit sunny in the evening, you know.
True, that's true, yeah.
Look at the highlights.
So yeah, so some of it will be, actually it's not glamorous, you know.
It's boggy and smelly.
Boggy and smelly, hot, and probably, you know, with, you know, deadly animals around.
Mozzies must be as well, and yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. They like wet and warm environments. So some of it is data collection, you know, so literally being out in the field. I mean, I have been, you know, chest deep in like really smelly water in Uganda, you know, with crocodiles around. Oof. You know. But the remainder of the time is really spend looking at the data and sitting in front of the desk, really. So there's a bit of both. I don't really do chemistry or anything like that, you know, so I don't work in a lab. I don't walk around with a white lab coat.
It's good. I'll get rid of that image.
Not me, no. Just picture the dirty swan.
I now have Carol as a whole crocodile. Yeah. Wrestling, stop yeah. trying to attack me. I'm collecting data over yeah. this side.
I'm a bit of a coward, so no. I would probably ditch the science and, you know, just save myself.
I think that's a really good answer. Yeah. I think there's only so much you should do in the name of science. When you're facing down a crocodile, it's time to say enough's enough.
That's it, yeah. Not worth it.
And do you also have to be careful about your footprint on those environments? As to going in and collecting that stuff to analyze, and, you know, how much is in the air dependent on how much you've trampled through to get it all?
Yes, that's such a good question, because as soon as you interact with a system, you modify it, and what you measure is not probably what it would have, you know, done, you know, in a natural state. But because of the nature of my measurement approach, we only have to go in very infrequently, and the instruments are running autonomously, you know, over prolonged periods of time. So in this way, just because of the nature of the measurement technique, we avoid interfering too much with the environment. Otherwise, if you work more invasively, you have to be aware of that. So people, for example, build boardwalks, you know, so they will only step on the boardwalks, and then that way they don't trample on the vegetation and they don't compact the soil. But this is such a good question. Yeah.
Because I can imagine, you know, if I'm measuring stuff in the air and I'm there going, right, let's get in here, and I'm pulling
because
everything
Sarah
out.
Because Sarah's not allowed to do any of these things for that exact reason. And she
exactly.
goes flailing around.
And then I slip and I fall over and things are everywhere. The measurement in the air is going to be influenced by my actions. Mm-hmm.
It is, yeah. And if you've ever been in, you know, for example, the what you were talking about, the childhood memory where you had, you know, the kids, you know, poking around, you know, at the bottom of the pond, you would have seen bubbles, you know, and this is purely gas bubbling, and that's called ebullition. And these are big gas bubbles that are able to make it to the surface. So any, you know, interference, walking on it, poking around with a stick, all of this will have a you know.
If we were going to rank methane against everything else, you know, where does that sit?
The way to look at methane is that it is a very, very strong greenhouse gas. And if you look on a sort of 20-year, you know, time span, methane can be responsible for up to 80 times more warming than carbon dioxide. So it's much, much more potent than carbon dioxide. But... The silver lining, if you like, is that methane is not as long-lived as carbon dioxide. So typically, a molecule of methane will only float around in the atmosphere for about 10 or 12 years. So that's quite short for a gas. For carbon dioxide, we're talking 100 years or more, you know. So what this means is that if you can, so you've got a very strong gas from a global warming potential, you know, how much warming can cause, but then it's not around for very long, you know, in the atmosphere. So if you can reduce the methane, you know, methane sources, you know, emissions, wherever they are, you have a very quick gain. Whereas obviously there's more carbon dioxide around, and it's important to actually, you know, decrease, you know, these emissions, but the effects of reducing them will not be seen for a very long time. Whereas for methane, you know, you can see within a decade, you can see a change. And so this is why it's important.
Yeah. So we've got a swamp, you know, your imaginary pond swamp type place that's being influenced by climate change and is producing methane. And therefore, you know, the best thing to do is to take bring that back into being wetland so it can be what it is and should be, and keep the carbon underneath and protected within that wetland, rather than just then digging it up for palm oil, because actually we want to stop the methane production and prevent the carbon being pulled out into the atmosphere. Is that
right.
The right interpretation?
It is. Essentially, if you drain a wetland, you will cause more carbon dioxide to come out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But the methane will come down.
Yeah.
But it will not be able to, you know, store or take down as much carbon dioxide from the air. So you have a net release. You release more than you take down.
Yeah. It becomes redundant then.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Your methane sounds scary, but actually methane's better than carbon.
It's a trade-off. You know, it's a fine balance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So you have to re-wet, and you need to go let these wetlands come back to, you know, as close to a natural state as you can be. And there's a fine line to tread, but there's only gains, really, you know, from a sort of like climatic point of view.
And if we had the wetlands completely naturally as they should be, if we sorted out this planet, if we rolled back the years, would the methane production of those wetlands be as high as they are now?
It would depend on what the temperature is, because, you know, the methane production in these wetlands is linked to the air temperature or the soil temperature. Mm-hmm. And if this global temperature keeps on rising, the methane emissions will follow.
Yeah.
Just because these are not microbial, you know, processes, and they are directly linked to temperature.
Mm. Yeah. So, and there is little we can do in that methane production without bringing those global temperatures down.
Exactly. And it's called a feedback loop, you know. So the more methane you produce or you emit, you know, the more global warming you cause. And in turn, the global warming will cause more methane to come out. It's an evil circle, you know.
But we created that, you know, we created those temperatures for the methane. But what we don't want to do is then to drain those wetlands and release all that carbon. We need those wetlands, even though they're producing that methane, but we need to bring down those temperatures so that then they're being the wetlands they should be, and they are keeping all the carbon in, and they're not producing all their methane that they are doing now.
Exactly. And not only are they just keeping the carbon in, they're taking carbon out of the atmosphere as well, because the plants, you know, are actively drawing down, you know, the carbon dioxide that's in the atmosphere. And these wet conditions allow the carbon to stay in the ground. So even though there's methane emissions on you know, at the same time, you still have a positive effect of having a wetland, you know, rather than having a drained former wetland.
So that's our to-do list for tomorrow, which is to bring down the global temperatures, to reflood the wetlands that have been drained, and we can go back to just being happy humans.
Perfect. I think that's all easily accomplished within 24 hours.
I'm going to put it on my to-do list. Absolutely. Me. Done. Carol, that has been really, really interesting. You know, for really understanding that balance of those wetlands and that importance for that carbon retention, but the way that we're treating the planet and that methane that is then becoming that negative side of things as well. Is there anything else that we should know about swamps and methane, or have we covered everything within that convoluted conversation that we just had?
I would just like to finish on a sort of like extreme end of, you know, what can happen to a wetland that's become that's gone off the rails, if you like. Sometimes there's so much methane that can come out, that is produced, and they can come out that a lake can catch fire. And that's happened, literally fire on the lake, you know, that you can't put out because obviously the water is burning already. And that happened in Bangalore in India a few times. There is so much wastewater going into one of these city, they call them lakes, but they are man-made reservoirs. So the water is, and the temperatures are high, you know, there's a lot of organic matter going around. And there's so much methane that it reaches explosive low levels. And, you know, wow. A sort of ignition just sets the whole thing on fire.
That's the level we really don't want it to get to.
We don't want to get to that point, no. That's bad. Yeah.
Wow.
That is.
But apart from that, I think we know everything.
That's one of those you go, cool, what an ending. Okay. It's on fire.
It's a party killer, isn't it?
It's brilliant. I think it's the best way to end it.
Let's bring it back, though. You know, party killer. Let's just imagine that it was just Shrek in a swamp lighting his methane.
You've got to let Shrek go, Sarah. Let him go. We've learned too much for him to still be in your brain today.
It's been really interesting.
Really interesting. And I've loved learning about it. And I have to say, a brilliant gin choice as well. I have loved it.
Yeah, really good gin.
I'm ready for a refill. So yeah, I've loved the gin.
Oh,
yeah.
Time for another one.
Okay. On that, some more gin. But thank you, Carol. It's been really
thank
lovely.
You so
thank
much.
You for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
So, Anya.
Sarah.
The fiery conversation of swamp methane.
Yeah, I'm all over it.
What have you learnt?
I have learnt that 6% of the world is swamp. Yeah?
No, yeah. Not... Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, 6% of the world is swamp, and and one third of all methane is produced from that 6% of swamps. Will you let me finish? Because sometimes I'm about to say something intelligent and you cut me off.
And only because I suddenly realised that my sieve-like brain has, like, bigger holes in the sieve than yours.
Oh, yeah. That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Oh, stop it, you.
You've
oh,
got a tighter mesh of yourself.
Oh, stop it.
You're right.
I love how we go from insulting each other to that in about 20 seconds.
So the expanse of methane produced by those swamps, you know, when we think about methane and we think about Shrek, we think about cows and we don't think about those swamps, but it's not the swamp's fault.
It's not the swamp's fault. The swamp is just meant to be there. It's us fucking
and
with
not
the world.
Producing methane. Yeah. It's only because of the temperatures that are now making them into those methane producers.
But also, you know what? The methane's better than the carbon. It's not going to hang around as long. So you might as well. You know what? Sometimes you got to take what you get, all right? It might not be what you ordered, but it's not as bad as it could be.
Absolutely. So, yeah, you don't just go, oh, my God, you're producing methane. Let's drain you. Oh, my God, you're producing carbon. But actually, we need to we need to deal with the climate. We need to fill in those swamps that we've taken the water out of to make sure that they can actually do the wetland thing they're meant to be doing.
Just leave them the fuck alone.
And then we need to reduce the global temperatures. You know,
ideally,
turn it down, turn the temperatures
not
down.
Not to get on our soapbox again, everybody.
Oh, do you know, but the problem is, as Carol was saying, how do you get into doing this research? I go into doing the research where the trends are, where the things are that the most important. You know, this is where our research is going. It's on the climate because the climate's pretty fucked. So, you know, actually, most of our topics are becoming, many of them, more climate focused because that's where the funding is. That's where the focus is in trying to change it, trying to deal with it.
And on that, happy fucking Friday, gang, because that was the best speech I've ever heard from Sarah Cruz. Everybody put your hands together. Well done. Well done, Sarah.
Have more gin.
Hell yeah.
Need more gin.
And if you're here to complain that we've done a lot of climate topics, well, are you recycling, you bastard?
Well, don't recycle, you bastard. That would produce carbon. But definitely don't put it in the swamp.
And on that note, I think it's time for us to go.
Although maybe it's a good place to put a body. Anyway,
we'll see you next week, guys.
Swamp methane, leave it be.
I'm mind boggled and I've got an empty glass, and that is Gin and Topic in a nutshell.
Oh, it is. So it was good, and we will fill that glass for next week, and we will empty our brains sieve-like and be ready to learn more next week.
Sarah, before next week, where can everyone find us?
Well, they can find us on social media at Topic Gin, or they can head over to our website at ginandtopic.com, and they can message us, they can, you know, interact with us on that social media type platformy thing. And of course, don't have to wait a whole week.
No.
Because we've got Tuesday Booze Day on Tuesday, introducing the gin. And they can always listen to episodes that they might not have listened to whilst they're waiting.
We've got 6 whole series. You've got 5 to go back and listen to if you haven't already. And we will see you on Tuesday for Tuesday Booze Day.
Nice. Cheers.
Sloincha.